Okay, here we go. L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore and love. Is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can make it take my heart, but please don't break it. Love was made for me and
Diana Krall
on WBGO.
You want to talk or you want to play?
We all can talk.
One of the things about what you were just doing is playing, and one of the things you and I talked about all the way back at the beginning was how you want to keep on playing. So this record, Turn Up the Quiet, is full circle for you. It's really you, the pianist. It even says on the in the publicity, Diana Krall is first and always a jazz pianist. And you were afraid early on, I remember, that you might lose that. You didn't want to lose that. That there might come a time when, like Nat Cole, he didn't play the piano much. You wanted to always return, at least, to the piano. That was
I think
you
other
first
people were more afraid of it than I was, frankly.
You said you were amazed also about Nat. How did he do it? To learn, one of the things you were trying to learn more and more, as you started to sing more and more, was how do you sing and play piano at the same time? Yeah. He played sideways. You know?
Yeah.
But you said you hoped to learn how, your line was, I hope that one day I'll be able to discover the secret, how he did that. Did you discover the secret?
Well, Nat Cole was such a great jazz pianist. If he didn't sing, I would be listening to him. He would be a tremendous influence on me. But he wasn't. He was a jazz singer and a popular singer as well. So,
you
I still
of
listen.
That way.
Sorry,
you think of yourself.
He's still
that
my.
Way.
Well, he's still my. You know, my hero for every reason. In that he sings popular music, and he doesn't necessarily scat sing, but he can. But that's not what he was known for. So he kind of did two different things. And whenever I've been kind of leaned towards maybe veering away from the melody a little bit vocally, I make sure I don't, even sometimes though I feel like I could, it doesn't suit me.
Ever
so
thought
I'm comfortable
about
with that now.
Ever thought about doing an all instrumental album?
No.
No, okay.
But I could, but I don't know if, I mean, maybe, that's a good idea. Maybe with maybe 30-second songs. Ambient music for airports, kind of influenced.
They sometimes play hip music at the airport. You never know.
I don't know. That's a good question.
You're going to be taking flight a lot because you're going on the road for like 3 months. It's insane.
Yeah, with these gentlemen.
Cool.
Thank you. Yeah,
well,
lucky
with
me.
These gentlemen, whip
yes.
something out.
I don't even have to show up.
Yeah, okay.
I know.
What else you want to play?
Oh, I don't know.
L-O-V-E is on the album?
That sounded pretty good, I think.
So is
Nine
Day.
We don't have to do that again, right?
Nine Day,
okay. I haven't even done my sort of eucalyptus. You know, my husband's across the hall, right?
Yeah?
Yeah, just in case. I need a lozenge or something.
Just in case he'll bring you a lozenge? Is that what he'll do?
Bring me a cup. He'll bring the cup. I brought him a scarf. He'll bring me a cup of tea. It's nice to see you, Michael.
Huh?
It's nice to see you.
It was lovely
you knew
to
see
me.
You knew me.
Listen, you know,
before,
early...
When
well,
I was, you, before, you know, when I was still living in Boston.
Sure.
Yeah.
You used to drive down...
Listen to the Singers Unlimited on my way down to...
You used to time it so you could get the signal. Now we're on WBGO.org.
I know.
And you have called me from out in Nanaimo.
But I've got the radio on with you.
But, you know, there was a time early on, too, where you really were looking... You saw your career ahead of you. And you saw where it could go, and it could go all different ways, but it could become more, as you're becoming more and more popular, how am I going to have a life, and how am I going to be fulfilled artistically? And now you're happily married with mother, and artistically completely fulfilled. Or are you completely fulfilled? You want to do anything else?
Oh, sure.
Does it affect, I mean, how does having the twins affect you as a musician?
That's why I'm late. I'm never usually late, but I'm more relaxed about it now because I get to yell at them, you know, not yell at them, going, put your socks on, you got to get to school. My son's made this sort of box, like a soap box with rubber bands that he's playing, and he's showing me this different kind of instruments they're making, and they're late for school. So thank God for FaceTime, that's all. I'm watching them while they're brushing their teeth.
How old are they
now? How exciting is that? It's just normal stuff.
How old?
10.
10.
Yeah.
You also wondered how you're going to keep a relationship together when you're on the road all the time, and you and Elvis are both on the road, not together. So you still managed to somehow work it out.
Well, he's across the hallway from me.
All right,
today,
there you go. But sometimes you're going to be in Denver.
I carry his ukulele, and he carries me home.
All right. But in the meantime, night and day, he is the one.
That's for sure. night and day, you are the one. Only you beneath the moon and under the sun, where the near to me far makes no difference where you are. I think of you night and that this longing for you follows wherever I go. In the roaring traffic's boom, in the silence of my lonely room, I think of you night and night and day, under the high of me. Oh, such a hungry yearning burned inside of me. Torment won't be true till you let me spend my night and day.
Diana Krall is with me on the WBGO. Night and day we play you on the WBGO, and have for a long time, from the very beginning. This record, this new record, to Turn Up the Quiet, is full circle, like I was saying to you. In many ways, John Clayton was on your very first album. Jeff Hamilton was on your very first album up in Canada, before even the first album on GRP. And did you have a sense of that, or is it just to you this is all a continuum? not that you're returning to anything, because your last album was very different. This album is more like your earlier album, your earliest album.
I actually think it is a return to, for not forever, but return I studied with Jeff Hamilton and John Clayton and Ray Brown and Jimmy Rolls when I was 19 in L.A. because I had a Canadian Arts Council grant. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So, and then I raised some money to do a demo tape, analog tape, where I recorded with Jeff and John in L.A., and then we brought the tapes to Jim West in Montreal for Just in Time Records. And Stepping Out, we recorded a little bit, and then I got signed to GRP with Carl Griffin, and then Tommy the Puma came in as a producer and saw me performing on BET, an episode of BET.
This is your last work with him, and it's wonderful because you...
I was 28, so that's 25 years I've been working with
You refer to Tom. The new album as our best work, meaning how you and Tommy created this album together. Did you pick out the songs together, or were there songs that you picked and songs that he picked?
That's the best part is picking out tunes. So I went up to his house in Pound Ridge with his wife Jill and stayed there for a few days. And I would just sit and play the piano while they were kind of hanging out, and he'd say, "That sounds great, babe," and then he'd come back in, and we just had so much fun, and Jill has often said to me, "That's what we used to do in L.A. when we had our house, people would come in," and Al Schmidt told me that they would drive up to the house sometimes after sessions and see who was there, and be Randy Newman playing, and I'm not Randy Newman, but that's what I did at home, so it was very comfortable, so I would have the freedom to come up with tunes, and then Tommy would write them down, then we'd go to dinner and then come back and watch YouTubes of things and listen to music, and Tommy opened up a bottle of wine and say, "Hey babe, there's more wine in there." So, and Jill make, "All right, I'm going to bed." And they took care of me as like my New York parents. Jill would have my favorite movie queued up on the DVR for when I did go to sleep, and I just, that was our creative process. And that was what it was like doing Look of Love. We'd just go and listen to music. And I would always say to him, "Do you think this sounds too sad? There's too many sad songs on this." And he goes, "What, are you kidding me?" And so we'd go through When No One Cares, and we'd always end up with a list. I said, "The record company's going to come back to us and say, you need a couple more upbeat, snappier songs for this record. it's too much. But then we went in with Alan Broadbent and did a few duo recordings with him in Avatar, and then John Clayton came up to Vancouver, and we went into Sarah McLachlan's studio and just recorded a few things, about 25 tunes in one afternoon, and did some just, then we went from there, and then I assembled three different ensembles, say that five times fast, but we just had three different dates, and then about 75 songs.
You have
so
more.
We just
can.
Literally
You're
just
gonna
started.
Come out with,
I've got
with
lots.
Part two of this.
Yeah,
right?
And I've got Alan Broadbent, bless him, because we started out doing more of an orchestral record, and then it sort of evolved into simpler. That's not quite the word, but not as much of an orchestral focus as we've done before. So. Alan wrote out all the music for me, charts. "What do you feel like playing today?" I remember I put "Isn't It Romantic" on the piano, and John said, "Oh, I love that song." And I wasn't sure. So some things were just warm-up tunes, and other things we'd played before.
And things even with Tommy. Tommy was always in the studio.
Yeah,
literally
just like
in the studio.
Yeah, where you're sitting. Sometimes I'd say, "Tommy, you got to just move." We would always like, "Where is Tommy going to sit?" But always would be within the ensemble. He was part of the band, and I relied on him, because he would sit where you were sitting with us while we were recording, and it was great because sometimes it would be, just to look like.
Yeah.
One more, and sometimes it would be we'd all. Schmidt. Hey, Schmidt. We'd all turn around and ask Al, and he says, "Yeah, you might want to come in here and hear what's going on." And then we'd come in, and we'd be like, we'd be thinking it was like, wow, and it was like, maybe we need to dial it back a little bit. But it was great working with him, and to see him, you know, especially discover a new people that he'd worked with before, but with Mark Rebo, he was familiar with Mark, but he got to know him really quite well, and he was like, "Hey, you know, this cat's unbelievable." And I said, "Tommy, have you checked out Ceramic Dog?" You know, and he was so enthusiastic about everything new and full of energy. You know, I'd be like, "I gotta go home." He's like, "Oh, we'll just go for some pasta and a glass of wine. We'll be fine."
He was enthusiastic about you from the beginning because we talked, and he was. I remember he talked about you. You did the song on the Beatles album, and he was so blown away.
That was
by
like
it,
a turning
and
point.
I love her, and mm-hmm. and you did this first album. I wrote the notes on this on Only Trust Your Heart, but he. What is he going to do? Where are you going to go? And I called him after the gig in Montreal. Your first gig was one of the greatest concerts I've still seen in 25 years in Montreal, of you playing the Nat Cole songs with Russell Malone and Paul Keller. It's one of the swingiest concerts. You were just letting loose and playing. It was so, it's like jazz the way it's supposed to be. And I called him up and I said, "You have to record this trio." And he said, "I don't know if I want to do a Nat Cole tribute." I said, "It doesn't matter. You have to record, you have to get that interplay. You and Russell Malone throwing harmonic curveballs at each other and just swinging
so hard. More curveballs my way than I was his, I think."
yeah. But laughing, because you would laugh every time he would do it. And he said,
We're always laughing. We laugh a lot. Yeah, it's like the whatever we're doing, we always.
But then Tommy said, "You know, that ended up being a Nat Cole record."
And that was a very, very, very incredible move by you know, Andre Menard and Marianne Topper, because it was Benny Green, and then Russell and Paul and I opening for him. It was in a small little club, and we had residency. You'd call it residency, but we had, you know, a week or two there. And that was really nice. It was nice to have that time to just play and figure it out. And,
your whole career I've seen in microcosm year after year in Montreal. So that's always been wonderful from the very beginning.
It's my town.
Let's have something else, please.
Well, we're talking about Nat Cole. And we did one that's probably coming out next, in the next part two. So can we just play an Nat Cole tune that's not on this record, but maybe on the next one?
You may play whatever you like.
Okay, so the After Midnight Sessions?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you want to play Just You, Just Me?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. One thing I wanted to say about Tommy, though, which I forgot and I don't want to forget, is that rather than be sort of meticulous about it needs more, He would just be all about the performance. That's what he wanted. He wanted just to get, let's just get the performance. He wanted the best performance. If there was mistakes, we could, you know, we didn't really go in and, you know, really change. We tried to find the best, most magical kind of performance. That's what he was always looking for. And he gave us time to do that. Sometimes I would just sit at the piano for 10 minutes and just try to figure out. And he'd just be patient. He'd sit and just like, whatever you got to do. You know, so I was very lucky for that. Oh, okay, let's just go.
Just me, let's find a cozy spot to curl and goo. Just us, just we, I've missed an awful lot, my trouble is you. Oh, gee, what are your charms for? What are my arms for? Use your imagination, just you, just me. I'll find a cozy spot for wonderful you. Thank you.
What are my arms for? Use your imagination, just you, just me.
Diana Krall is on WBGO playing with some cats you have played with quite often through the years. Name them again.
They're all amazing artists and band leaders in their own right. I'm lucky to be sharing this time with them. Robert Hurst III on the bass. On the drums, Kareem Riggins. On guitars, Anthony Wilson. On fiddle, Stuart Duncan. And sometimes other things.
And you, yeah. And you. You know, one of the other great concerts in Montreal I remember was the solo concert, and you played home movies. You talked about you had your father, literally your father's sheet music. You said you could smell the cigarette smoke still on them, and you were playing.
I go on his piano now and open it up, and now it smells like cigarettes and whiskey, and all the great parties they must have.
But that's music you fell in love with as a child, still. And it's you were bringing back a lot of songs that people don't even, I mean, the people don't even know who Cliff Edwards is anymore. And you were playing Cliff Edwards songs. You played a George Jessel song, or he had a sheet music of that at one point, I remember.
I remember I was playing a town where U.B. Blake was born, and I was playing some one of those, Love Will Find a Way. I mean, I remember when I first saw UB Blake and Alberta Hunter on a television show, and I said to the audience, this is a song by UB Blake, where he's from, and I don't know if anybody knew that except for me, but I grew up listening to having a lot of sheet music and listening to a lot of records, and I have my dad's all his Blue Bird Fats Waller recordings, and I have West End Blues, Louis Armstrong that he had, and other different singers,
I've always wanted to ask for you to play me some Fats Waller. This is the first chance I think I've ever gotten to ask you when we're sitting in.
Fats Waller?
Play me something. Just play me some Fats Waller. Because you talked about him.
How can I
about
do
how
that?
Much Fats Waller really inspired you as a girl, as when you were just growing up.
That doesn't mean I can play.
Play anything.
Play anything.
Up in Harlem at a table for two. There were the four of us, me, your big feet, and you. From your ankles up, dear, you sure are sweet. But from then on, you're just too much feet. This is my high school band audition.
Did you get in the band?
I played third clarinet for a while.
I don't know.
Fats Waller tuned. Don't even go to a picture show if you are not at my side. I stay at home by my radio, but I am satisfied. All my flirting days are gone on the level from now on. Keeping out of mischief now. Really, I'm in love. I'm through playing with fire. It's you whom I desire. All the world can plainly see. You're the only one for me. I have told them. Break up our romance, staying true to every vow. I'm keeping out of mischief now.
plainly see. You're the only one for me. I have told them in advance they can't break up our romance. Staying true to every vow I'm keeping out of mischief.
Thank you.
I'll be here all week.
Diana Krall.
On the spot with, there.
With
it's
the,
early.
WBGM.
It's not like late night, or I've already well, had a gimlet.
You never know. Turn Up the Quiet is
throat
the
title. Little different.
Turn Up the Quiet. The title is the title of the album, but that's a lyric from an Yvonne Lynn song, Love Dance, and that's a song you recorded with Barbara Streisand.
Well, no, Jeff Keyser originally.
And yes.
Yeah, so I got an email from Jeff saying, it's okay that you called your record the same that I called my record. Well, at least they sang on the tune. But I love that record. I love Jeff. But I guess Love Dance.
What did you learn from Barbara Streisand, playing with Barbara Streisand?
How to play Gin Rummy better. One thing, yeah, we played a lot of cards. What I learned from her, how her mind works so unbelievable. Like she's thinking ahead all the time. She's always thinking of a different way to do things. Like, could it be done this way or could it be done this way? And some people interpret that as being, why do you do that? But I understood that. That's how she works. She wants to see, hear different ways. She wants to have. She thinks cinematically, and maybe we could try it this way, or we could try it this way. And she's an incredible woman, and I learned so much working with her, especially when she was playing with Bill Charlap. You know, and
who also plays with Tony Bennett, who you have also learned from. Who also talks about how he never wants to sing the song. He'll sing the same song maybe every show. But never the same way.
Yeah.
There's always something. He's always thinks of himself as a jazz singer, first and foremost. Yeah. And that's like you, too?
I don't think of myself as a jazz singer.
Okay.
Maybe because I don't improvise. I don't know. I don't really think about it too much.
But you don't sing every note the exact same way every time you sing a song.
No, but I don't know. But I'm not like a singer, like a jazz singer like Ella Fitzgerald. That's what I consider a jazz singer.
But one of your inspirations was Carmen McRae. Whose singing voice was very much like her speaking voice. And the same for Billie Holiday. If you hear her speaking, you realize it's just musical. And you do that the same, in some ways, you do that also.
Yeah, well, Carmen McRae was definitely someone I got a chance to see in, with Jimmy Rolls as well. You know, those were two big influences. And the way she, that Great American Songbook, the way she sang, if the moon turns green, she sing sort of like. I love Carmen McRae. I love that record, The Great American. That's a fun record with Joe Pass. And they sing that crazy Jimmy Rolls tune, The Ballad of Thelonious Monk. Do you ever play that on your show?
I haven't played it for a long time. I'll play that for you.
Okay. That would be great.
Okay, I played plenty for you. You played plenty for me. It's so wonderful over the years.
Yes, thank you, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Really, what do you look ahead to do? You got to focus now. You're going to go on a 3-month tour. You're going all over the country. You're going all over Europe. You're going to go from Denmark to Barcelona.
I am.
Yeah, I got
to. I know. I don't
right
look
here.
Too far. I don't look too far ahead. And but I'm looking forward to because I have this amazing artist that I get to work with, and we can play anything from, it's not just, we're going out, I didn't want to do a record where I said, okay, I have to do, this is a very relaxed record and easy, I'm excited about every, I love every song on the record, and I wanted to just have songs that just walk out and play and not be too overly, just be comfortable within that, this realm, which I am. I said that to Bob yesterday. I said, this is so great because everything I look forward to. But we can play things from other, you have a big repertoire and these guys can play anything. You can play How Deep Is the Ocean, in which we've sort of reworked, and or a Joni Mitchell tune, or maybe something that's just like a butterfly from Glad Rag Doll, or All or Nothing at All. That's what the beauty is of going out to play, is that we all can play a lot of different songs, not just one. It's not just one theme, which makes me feel good.
You have a favorite song on this album?
Well, I think these are the 11, very Spinal Tap, I know, very 11 of my favorite songs of about 50 we did. So Tommy, that was his genius and how to put it all together. But I like Moonglow, and we can play that maybe.
Wonderful.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
up in the blue. I'll always remember that moon glow gave me. That moon glow gave me. That moon glow gave me
Diana Krall is with me on WBGO. That's one of the songs that highlights a wonderful album. Turn Up the Quiet. It's your umpteenth album on Verve, right? Yeah. Tell me about the song Sway. This is a song I've heard, I don't know how many times, but I really don't know where it comes from. And it's got a different feeling to it. And I always can't place where the feeling is, but it's always somewhere exotic.
I know, I have different cinematic ideas about things, not necessarily from older films, but just in my head. So I learned it from Julie London, and I'm familiar with Michael Bublé's version, both great versions, and I think Dean Martin recorded it too, I'm not sure. But that's Julie London was what I was listening to, and I was kind of messing with the whole, am I going to do this tune, am I not going to do this tune, and then we just tried it, and it became what it became. We just were able to, you know, when I was recording, I didn't make a plan of anything in any arrangements. So we just,
some things were, like Alan Rodman wrote the orchestral part of this on the album, right?
Yes,
but
he did.
He
wrote all
the marimba, because it's all about when marimba.
No, I know, and we didn't want the fiddle to come in, you know. You know, I can hear the sound of violins, and all you hear is suddenly you hear the violins. And so we recorded it first, and then Alan wrote the arrangement after we'd already recorded it. So you know, it's the ending that I think Alan really just changed it, almost something between an Alma Jamal groove, like Vernell Fournier, that Jeff was kind of doing. And then Alan putting it upon, so I was like, but I think what Alan had the strings like coming in sort of full on at first, and then we, excuse me. We pulled them back a little bit in mix, so that it there was a crescendo, and I just think it sounds sort of like a very kind of George Martin-y kind of thing on it that Alan did. I really loved it, and I think that's my favorite song one of my favorite songs on the record for sure, because it creates a vibe, and it's no one was worried about fading it out too fast at the end. Just let it play.
So many songs on the album you learned from. Some of your favorite singers, obviously, L.O.V.E. from Nat Cole, and so many of the songs that you recorded are Ella Fitzgerald songbook songs. I mean, did you grow up listening to those two, the songbooks?
I grew up listening to a lot of Frank Sinatra, but a lot of Ernestine Anderson, because Ernestine Anderson, I loved all those records she did with Monty and Ray, and I sang in her key, similar key. So I would sing along with those records and play along with those records. But Ernestine Anderson was really, still is, just someone I was always drawn to.
Just to be completely full circle.
And Jimmy Rolls.
Rolls, yes. Yeah. But just to be completely full circle, do you still sing Only Trust Your Heart?
You know, I thought about that the other day. I have not, and I think I will.
Will you now?
No. I don't think I know it.
Ah, you forgot it after all.
I haven't played it for so many years, and I saw you had the record, and I thought, I've got to get that written out.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Well, you have Nate more Carter. To do. I mean, and you have, I mean, when will this, is there really going to be a second album of this, just from these sessions?
Well, I have a few things. I found some cassette tapes that I did with Lessons with Ray Brown. and Jimmy Rolls, but the lessons with Ray Brown are really, was really the sort of changed my idea to do a very orchestral record with my sincere, you know, apologies to Alan Broadbent for not having, you know, what we sort of intended upon initially. But we do have orchestral things that, to finish off, and Beautiful, a song called But Beautiful that Alan wrote. By the way, Alan Broadbent's new record is just phenomenal. I don't know if you've heard it. It's so mind-blowingly beautiful. I found these tapes with Ray Brown, and he was trying to teach me how to play How High the Moon, and I couldn't get it. And then he said, Crawl, do you ever play just a bass line? You know, like with Gene, sometimes he plays bass lines. So I said, yeah, I do all the time. And he says, okay, play something you're comfortable with. So I was like, he comes in. No, not yet. And then all of a sudden, I hear Ray playing behind me. I'm 22 years old. And then we start playing choruses, and I wasn't singing at that time. And it was just like, all of a sudden, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in like playing tennis with the greatest tennis player in the world or something. He wasn't going easy on me. He was just, and just was like, he played with me just like he was playing with Oscar Peterson. That's why I think it's important to not only study with people only on your instrument. And what I got from those lessons, and I just heard it last November, and it was play something you're comfortable with. And that became my mantra for this record, was just to play things I'm comfortable with. I started listening again to, of course, lots of Teddy Wilson, which is what inspired I'll See You in My Dreams, and listen to those great records, the Oscar Peterson Trio with Ella and Louis Armstrong, of course, and Ben Webster and Sonny Stitt and Fred Astaire, you know, and I just listened to how relaxed they were, and then I went back to Jimmy Rolls, you know, so... I started listening to Jimmy Rolls and Ray Brown, and so that's where the love comes from. I started listening to all those and Jimmy, and thinking that's why we did John Clayton and I didn't know at all, because I wanted to do just duo. I wanted to just kind of make sure that there was that I did it, made a jazz record with room for soloing. And Alan was very cool about it and said, okay.
I get very weird when people put different music in different boxes, but I think so much of music is all one thing, wonderful thing. But it's like, I can hear you always singing a Neil Young song, Heart of Gold, right? And yet I can hear you singing Rodgers and Hart and all that. I mean, do you hear the same thing in these songs, or do you hear something different?
No, I hear something different. And I had this conversation yesterday because, you know, the last record I did was a pop record. It was not a jazz record. It was with David Foster, and I wanted to sing the songs that I had listened to, like Jim Croce and Songs of the Eagles and Crowded House. But it wasn't I didn't want to make it sort of reinvented these pop songs into jazz songs. That was not my intention. It was a very, very successful and beautiful record. I still find like, I don't feel those are, if you think about tradition and modernism, all how they work together. You know, Miles Davis and Gil Evans were recording George Gershwin at the same time, you know, Frank Sinatra was, at very different ways, or Ornette Coleman, or you think about, you know, Keith Jarrett. I mean, and all standards have been like incredibly creative. Charlie Parker invented, you know, bebop over these standards. I mean, you can take something like How Deep Is the Ocean and How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How we originally recorded it. Or you can take it and...
How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How many times in a day do I think of you? How many roses are sprinkled with dew? How far would I travel just to be where you are? How far is the journey? How far is the journey? Here to a star. How deep is the ocean? 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 How deep is the ocean?
Berlin wrote that, one of my favorite composers. But yeah, Leon or Hathaway, and then I always love watching Alan Toussaint, you know, playing. There's some songs that I feel like I always will feel depth in, whether they're great American songwriters or not. Like, I always feel depth in Joni Mitchell's Case of You. You know, artistic, I can move around. And it's interesting chords that she's always. Bob Dylan's Simple Twist of Fate, because they're different kind of stories than a lot of other pop songs. That's why it's like a long conversation. But I think I am lucky that I have the freedom to and the mind, I guess, and desire to find those certain things. But I'm definitely, this album is, I mean, somebody said it's a return to jazz, and I was like, no, it's not. I've never left, and I was like, well, it is, kind of, because maybe not in live performance, but as far as recording, it's my favorite, I think, since, I love Look of Love, and I love every recording I've done, but I mean, because of the joy we had making those recordings, and that was a snapshot of a time. But this one's particularly special.
One of the songs, Look of Love, Maybe You'll Be There, I used because right after 9/11, to me, that was the song.
We were talking about that yesterday, and in all the chaos, because we made this record, and I was thinking about blue skies and the irony of blue skies, you know, and Look of Love was much more about loss for me than romance, you know. And but somewhere, somebody's sitting around a Formica table with a jelly glass full of something, you know, and talking to their family about their world late at night and what their, you know, not specifically to the news, but to their world. It's not only all this that's going on. And that's what I guess I try to keep that vision in my head. You know, when you're sitting up late and you're discussing, you know, what's going on with your kids in school, or how happy they are, or us, or how happy we are, or what the country is, or the world is, or what can we do. I mean, it's that kind of late night where we all turn off the screens and sit and talk about it with the music, with the radio on.
You're happy now, right?
Everything. I am.
everything sort of works out in ways maybe you don't expect, but you're happy that you're getting to do all the things you wanted to do.
I am happy. And, you know, when Tommy died, that was really, that really devastated all of us. And, you know, we had an amazing, there was an amazing memorial for him just last Monday. Seems like such a long time ago. And it was just astonishing and not unexpected because he was very beloved. How many people were there? But I still can't, I still just can't believe it. I really can't. And I, some days are more difficult than others when we talk about it. When I, for instance, I haven't seen the Downbeat magazine and opening it up and saying for Tommy, and I'm glad I had the time to put that dedication there, because, you know, we were just still talking about it. It was not something that, it was a complete shock. And it's hard, but I know that he would be sitting here and saying, just like you are, and saying, babe, this is just great. This is just sounds great. You know, I just hear his voice all the time. And I and Jill, who I love dearly, his wife, you know, kindly advised me as she does to just keep doing that, you know. And the choosing the song to play was very special, because I sang "They Can't Take That Away From Me" at his memorial, and that was Jill's choice, and it was so perfect, positive, and looking forward. And he loved this record, and we got to say to each other, we made a beautiful record. And he understood me. He knew what I wanted to do, and I couldn't have made this record without him, because he understood all the beauty and joy of Christian McBride and Rebo and Anthony and Jeff and John and Stuart, Tony Garnier, Russell Malone, Stefan Harris, who plays his Vibes, but unfortunately, he was the only overdub we did, but to the wire. I mean, the record was coming out sort of the next day, being announced, and I was told that we couldn't. It was too late, and to do that. And Tommy went into Avatar, and Steph was Stefan, and we finished. So these other things we got. There's other things to do.
I think that was the song that you sang when Tony Bennett called you out in Montreal.
That's
and
right.
Sat you down, and he held the microphone for you while you sang. And if I always remember thinking that was like your anointing, you know, that wonderful moment, you know, as he was like blessing you.
I'll never forget that moment. And also when I was driving to the airport with my children, and it came on the radio when you were on, and I said, and they were saying, "That's Mommy on the radio." And I listened to it again, and I thought, that's such a beautiful recording. It made me so happy. We're all sitting in the car. I know, I'm just like, my favorite movie is Radio Days, because I had radios around. Everybody had the radio on at my house. Before I went to bed, the last thing I heard at night was the radio, and I had my own radio where I was listening to, you know, shows. And that's why it's important that you support WBGO.
What's that number?
1-800-499-9246, or online at wbgo.org.
Is there one song that you always go back to? That's maybe one of Tommy's favorites, but some song that just means something that much more to you. That song, obviously, "They Can't Take That Away." Can you play that? Mm. Want to play that? Or play something. But something that I always wonder if, you know, without even thinking about it too much, it's like, if I'm going to sit down and play a song, come to mind like that?
I don't know. I know so many. I don't know. Sipped your tea, the memory of all that. No, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beamed, keys. The way you haunt our dreams, no, they can't take that away from me. We may never, never meet again on the bumpy road to love. But I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you held your knife, the way we drank till three, the way you changed our life. No, can't take that away from me. No, they can't take that away. No, they can't take that away. No, they can't take that away from me.
Thank you.
I changed the words a little bit.
It's okay. You're a jazz musician. They let you do that.